Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle, always with me, always by my side. We are going to talk about all kinds of shit today. I can't believe how much Bears news we've got. We've got episode one of Hard Knocks, guys. Hardly knocking. That's us.
Knocks?
Hard Knocks.
With an N? Oh, hard. Go delete some browser history real quick. That was not what I spent all night watching to prep for this podcast.
Hard Johnny Knocks. Folded right in half.
I Googled Bears with hard, and then, I mean, it was... Okay, wow. Yep. All right. I had a lot of opinions on that, too. I wasn't sure why that was what we were covering, but, you know. I did watch Hard Knocks, though. Yeah. It's a week. I think the next episode comes out tomorrow night, so we are probably the last Bears podcast out there to cover what happened on Hard Knocks last week at this point. But I feel like if you're familiar with Hard Knocks as a show, that was a pretty standard episode one. There really was not a whole lot to get into. Travis, I guess the number one, since he was kind of the main character of that episode, I guess, do you feel any differently about Matt Eberflus after watching that episode?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Jonathan Owens. There was a lot of Jonathan Owens action in that episode.
Yeah, I suppose there was, yeah.
Matt Eberflus came across as, like, the most dadly nothing burger on Hard Knocks history. I got nothing out of that except for he was like, I better look nice for my wife.
Yeah, she asked. Like, I like how this is the new, like, this is swag Matt Eberflus, and it's still, that man is just so utterly juiceless. As far as, like, what Hard Knocks, I did think, what did you think of the Nick Saban moment? I feel like, I want to tell you how I think that came across, how I think that meeting happened, because I feel like HBO was, like, in production meetings with Matt Eberflus, and they were like, for the love of God, you are the most boring human being. You have the least personality of any head coach that we've ever had on Hard Knocks. Yeah. Do you know any head coaches who have personality that we could, like, borrow just for, like, a scene or two? And he was like, well, Nick Saban was my college coach. And they were like, great, Sabes. Everybody loves Saban. So what did you think of the Saban conversation? What did you think about Nick Saban and his advice for Matt Eberflus?
Yeah, we have heard so much from Nick Saban since he retired. Just like he seems like he's all over. He's commenting on things. Anytime somebody has a question, I think Nick is just ready and willing to talk, which goes completely against type. And this is part of why that really stuck out to me in this episode. I always assumed that Nick Saban was this Bill Belichick, like, grumbly, I'm not going to talk to the media. You know, I have this adversarial relationship with everybody kind of guy. But what is borne out since he retired is actually that guy is happy to talk. He is so excited to chat with people now. And I think Eberflus called him in and he was like, baby, I will come in. We will talk for a whole hour just about football. The thing that stood out to me the most was his take on quarterbacks, which was like relentless positivity. Always be positive with your quarterback, especially in front of the team. It is so mental what he is going to go through. You have to be, like, in his corner the entire time. That's the most important thing. And I just did not expect that to come out of Nick Saban's mouth. It seems like something Eberflus is going to be able to do, because I don't think he has a negative bone in his body except for when it comes to Nate Davis. But as far as it goes with everything else, I think he's just a really nice guy. And I liked that advice, but yeah, it surprised me. I didn't expect this out of Saban.
I did like the cut, the way they cut it, so that Saban was saying, he's like, one thing I like to do is I like to stand right behind my quarterback during practice so I can see his perspective on each play and what he thought happened. And they immediately cut to Eberflus doing that behind Caleb. Yep. So that was a nice touch there. And we can talk a little bit about Matt Eberflus just in terms of what it sounds like is going on in practice and what I saw, especially in this preseason game against the Bills. I think the hire of Eric Washington as the defensive coordinator is really bearing fruit already. I saw a lot more twists and stunts and stuff from the Bears defensive line against the Bills than I remember seeing last year. And I think it sounds like in practice, they've been really trying to test Caleb out with a lot of blitz looks, a lot of different pressure packages. And that was part of the Hard Knocks too. I thought they did a nice little montage there of Caleb really kind of being going through it a little bit. Like there was a nice little montage there of Caleb just bad snap or bad play after bad play. Just to kind of show what he's going through. Did you feel like you learned anything more about Caleb Williams than you didn't already know just from seeing him on camera?
He came across as excited, but he did not come across like, you know, Hollywood in any way. He just came across like he was really excited to play football, and that was kind of it. He wasn't as much of a charisma vacuum as Eberflus, but he was similarly benign. Like, well, just there was nothing bad there.
I wonder how much of that is that. That's one of my main complaints, because I have always loved Hard Knocks originally. Like, the last couple of years, though, it has just become so carefully managed. Teams have... Because remember, they used to show you scenes of, like, guys getting cut and things like that. Like, you got some real live drama sometimes on Hard Knocks. And now it's so heavily managed, so I don't really know that we're actually getting an authentic look at anybody. It was a pretty standard Hard Knocks episode one. Hopefully now that they've set up the characters, if you will, and the storylines, we'll get some interesting stuff going forward. The slip and slide bit was pretty great.
And immediately bore fruit in the preseason game when he did the exact slide.
Yeah, it did. So. He slid. Yeah. And then I also thought Caleb, I would agree. Caleb comes off, and this is what we talked about this last week. Where was it? Which Bears player was it that came out and said, like, man, he is nothing. This kid is nothing like the media portrays him as. Like, he's really...
DeMarcus Walker?
Yeah, I was like, angry on Caleb's behalf. It was like, man, I was really prepared for this kid to be, like, a spoiled, like, brat that we had to discipline almost. But he's, like, a great kid who's really working hard, and you guys really did him a disservice. I think that's the sense you get from Caleb, is that, like, he really wants to be the guy in Chicago, which obviously all of the quarterbacks we've had before have wanted to be the guy in Chicago. But Caleb, I think specifically I think the idea of breaking the curse, if you will, or whatever, like the idea of being the good Bears quarterback is really appealing to him. I think he welcomes that challenge. I think he would love to write his story as Caleb Williams, curse breaker.
Yeah, I think, you mentioned they set up the main characters, but, like, did they? Because I feel like the main characters are, well, this week, there's no way it's not Nate Davis, first of all. Second of all, like, we didn't really hear from Rome. We didn't really hear from Keenan Allen or Montez Sweat at all. Like, no Tremaine Edmonds. We got Jalen right at the beginning in his funky car.
Yes.
But other than that, it really focused on Flus and it focused on Caleb Williams, which I understand.
I feel like 10 years ago, Hard Knocks would have been like, Jalen, so this, you checked yourself in for sex addiction this offseason. Can you talk about that? Like,
they just let everybody off so free.
That's something classic Hard Knocks would have touched on. Yeah, I feel like. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm interested to see. I mean, it's always nice to see a little bit behind the curtain, but it's so it's so heavily controlled now. You're really wondering how much you're really seeing behind the curtain.
Agreed.
But yeah, so that transitions nicely into the game on Saturday. So let's talk about our non-Caleb Williams impressions from that game. What stood out to you from that? Actually, I'm going to ask you one question, Travis. You said you wouldn't talk about him. You said he was a fifth-round pick. You don't talk about fifth-round picks until they do something.
Yeah.
Has Austin Booker done something worthy of being talked about by Travis yet?
No.
Has that happened? Still no.
No. You can talk about him if you want. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. His partner, his line mate, Hardy, I want to call him Daniel. Is his name Daniel Hardy? It's a very easy name, a very common name, but he's been playing just as well. Last offseason, a bunch of Bears defensive ends who we knew were getting cut also looked pretty good. The one thing is Booker did look good in limited time against the ones. He did look impressive.
Well, and I think it's not just who's getting sacks and pressures in the preseason, though. It's really about, like, how they're getting them. Yeah. I think with what's got people excited about Booker right now is the toolkit that he's flashing, and like how he's winning specifically is a way that's very translatable. That speed to power move that he has, where he's just consistently putting tackles and guards just on their back feet, just pushing them over. And he's been an absolute, and again, it's, you know, it's preseason. It is it's against backups, if you will. But I mean, he's a fifth round rookie. He should still be a backup. Yeah. But if you put a starting defensive end into a preseason game, had him play three quarters, like if you put Montez Sweat against the Bills backups, exactly what I would expect would be a three sack game. It would be a 20% pass rush win rate. I would want you to be demolished. And that, so it's notable to me that Austin Booker is doing that. I noticed on Twitter, he's getting a lot of, you know, national attention from quite a few guys who were like, yeah, I threw on the Bears Bills film to watch Caleb Williams, but I came away very impressed with this Austin Booker kid. He really was given the defensive, or he was given the tackles a tough time. So yeah, I think, I mean, obviously it's the preseason. He hasn't proven anything yet. I think, did we talk about it last week where I said, I thought they were maybe going to try to see what Austin Booker looked like in a couple more preseason games before they considered if they did, were going to add like a Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah.
And I think so far you can say Booker's putting in the kind of performance that I'm guessing they're not looking to sign a bargain bin defensive end right now.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, the thing we haven't talked about with Booker is he kind of fits this type that polls is kind of showing that he has for that second edge rusher. We saw it with Dom Robinson, Austin Booker here, and even Hardy, who's a guy out of Montana State. This is his second year. They are all three guys who had limited snaps in college, played at smaller schools.
Breaking news. Hold on.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sounds like Jahmyr Gibbs is being evaluated for a leg injury, and it's not good. Potentially.
We're not allowed to celebrate injuries, right?
Beep, beep, beep. No, that would be wrong.
Beep, beep, oh,
beep.
No.
Beep, beep,
beep. That poor guy.
JJ McCarthy listed with knee soreness, and they're not sure he's going to travel to the next preseason game, so it must be relative.
Knee soreness from carrying the Vikings on his back all day, right?
We'll get to the rookie quarterbacks here in a little bit. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that could be two big divisional injuries right there if JJ McCarthy and Jahmyr Gibbs are down for any length of time. Yeah, anyway, so no, you're talking about Booker.
So anyway,
you compared him to Dom Robinson. I will personally pistol whip you for that, but
it's a type. It's a type, right? It's Dom. It's Austin Booker. It's Hardy. It's these guys from small schools, big athletic potential, low snap counts in college, and they want to get them in there, and they want to see which one of them works. Right? It's similar to what we did with the three tech. They weren't small schools, but they took the raw talent guys. Right?
Is Kansas a small school? I mean, it's in the Big 12, or it was. I don't know what's...
Kansas is not a notable football powerhouse. Yes,
power five tackles. I mean, he's going up against Oklahoma and stuff.
That's right. Kansas did have a good year this last year, but as a recruit, this dude was not beyond two stars.
What he was as a recruit? It's what he did in the power at a power five conference.
I love that you're defending Kansas out here. You're like, fucking Kansas. Kansas is great. What are you talking about? Anyway, they're looking for guys who don't have a lot of wear on them, guys who flew under the radar but have big physical upside, right? And it looks like Dom Robinson didn't work out. God forbid the motherfucker is still on this team this upcoming season, but it looks like he will be. But it looks like they're kind of doing the lottery ticket thing, right? Like they did with Dexter and Pickens. It's, well, if we take two of them, good chance one of them pans out, because Flus's biggest characteristic is the ability to take these guys on the defensive line with pure potential and mold them into NFL stars. That's like his thing, his big upside.
The only part I'll disagree with you here, and I actually would have agreed with you at the time of the draft, but the thing that strikes me about Austin Booker, and I happen to know a gentleman who has talked to the Bears staff about Austin Booker, and what they said is what surprised them is that he is not this raw athlete that they got, like a Dom Rob. Like they were like, he's got a full, and that's what's drawing attention from a lot of the people breaking down the film, is he has a couple different moves already in his bag. I mean, Dom Robinson is entering year three. Has he developed a single move yet? Have we?
If anything, he's lost moves.
I feel like, like I said, like a football Benjamin Button, like we said, he just keeps turning more into baby. But Austin Booker, you know, I've seen him use a couple different techniques. He looks, I mean, again, I don't want to overhype him at all. I'm not saying that this guy is...
it's too late, in my opinion.
This guy is Max Crosby, but I do think, you know, he, as a purely pass rush specialist, third down edge rushing specialist, you know, a guy that you're just saying, like, look, you have no other responsibilities. Pin your ear back and get after the quarterback. He's showing a little juice in that role. And that was something we talked about at draft time, is that they didn't, this defensive line doesn't really need, I mean, it would be great to have another three down guy like Montez Sweat. But the thing they were really missing was the role that they obviously envisioned for Dominique Robinson originally, that just speed demon edge who just the one trick pony. I mean, which what Yannick Ngakoue was supposed to be, just the dude who pins his ears back on third down and gets after the quarterback. Booker, potentially a nice development in that specialist role.
Yeah. I mean, another guy on the defensive line. First of all, I thought the starting defensive line did a good job getting pressure.
I mean, for as much as we were just shitting on him, Dominic Robinson had a TFL against the Bills once. He did.
It looks like it was on a stunt. It looks like he was moving around and it was a little bit better for him. He's still not. I really don't need Dom Robinson to be here, but they look good. As the game went on, I thought Zach Pickens availed himself pretty well. He had He never had push last year. He had nice push. He had a really nice diving tackle to stop a quarterback scramble from Trubisky, turning what looked like it was going to be a 15-yard run into like a 2-yard loss. And he was really jacked up. Really excited. And I love to see that because I'm really not going to hold Zach Pickens' feet to the fire here, even this season. He was always going to be a 2 full-year development kind of guy. But to see him develop throughout this year, if he can contribute, like that would be absolutely massive.
And he was one of the biggest disappointments from the Hall of Fame game. In limited reps, he really was not noticeable. And that was a game where, like, neither the Bears nor Texans were even really playing their second stringers for the most part. So his lack of impact in that game was pretty noticeable. So, yeah, it was nice to see him make some moves there. I do think that this Bears secondary, and we'll keep harping on it, like, they have some guys out right now, and they still looked very impressive. Now, granted, that Bills pass-catching group is not fantastic.
I like Curtis Samuel, but if you're anybody going against Jalen is going to have trouble. And Curtis Samuel is not a number one option. And he's in hell out there. There were a couple snaps. You texted me about him, and I had to agree, even though I like Keon Coleman, but he was getting covered by Jalen. And he was like, do not fucking throw it at me.
Yeah.
Like I can't do anything with this.
Yeah. He was getting clamped. So I think right now the Bears, they're not all healthy, but the Bears top five corners are who they've got. Jalen, they've got Tyreek, they've got Kyler. You have Terrell Smith, you've got Jalen Jones, you know, Blackwell.
Blackwell.
It is a deep group of corners. I've been impressed consistently with them at every stop. So that was important. I also thought for all the doom and gloom, and I mean, we were literally, the whole episode, last week's episode was about dooming and glooming over the offensive line. I thought the offensive line held up pretty well, both run blocking and pass blocking, although I did think Shane Waldron was a little concerned about how well they would hold up in pure pass dropback situations, because he, of all the dropbacks Caleb had, I think, what, 6 of the 7 or 6 of the 8 were some kind of play action or boot action. Yeah. So they were definitely trying to move the pocket, and they were not, other than the third down strike to DJ Moore, which straight drop back and a very nice rep for Caleb. We'll talk about the Caleb specific parts here in a little bit, but yeah, I thought the offensive line for all the doom and gloom held up pretty well. Which again, Buffalo lost Ed Oliver early, and that is not the world's best defensive line, even with him, but certainly not without him, but still it was not a disaster, which is what it was sounding like of late.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, last year, you know, we had problems against lines that you could consider disasters. So, and we've had that going for a couple of years now. So it's nice to see, even when we have to slot Pryor in at right guard and you've got Coleman Shelton in at center, still held their own like pretty well. I was not concerned.
I thought Shelton specifically looked pretty good.
He did.
Big Tev had some big finishes. Yeah. I mean, the guys that we're not worried about, Tev, Braxton, Darnell, gave us no reason to be worried about them. I thought Shelton did pretty well. And I thought Pryor, yeah, I mean, Pryor looked like, to me, he looked like a backup guard, just kind of trying to hold his own. Yeah. But that's, you know, it was a group effort and he did fine. So he's not a guy that you want starting a lot of regular season games, but he is a guy that is an NFL player with a decent number of starts under his belt who I think can be non-embarrassing in a pinch at right guard. And he's the backup to the back. I mean, you, theoretically, Nate Davis is still the starter, and you have Ryan Bates behind him. So you would hope it would take quite a few injuries to get down to a Matt Pryor in a regular season game anyways.
I feel like it's you've said his name now. We've said it three times. We have to say something about Nate Davis. Like, the guy is not on the team at this
point. He's not. That is not a Chicago. As far as I'm concerned, that man is not a Chicago Bear.
Yeah.
I will adjust if he starts a regular season game this year, but at this point, you know, outcome looks grim.
Like, you see how hard it is to get Flus upset. You see how nice of a guy he is generally, and he is talking shit about Nate Davis in the media, like, angrily. How bad of a person do you have to be? How lazy of a player do you have to get that out of Flus?
Yeah, well, we mentioned it last week, but, like, Vrabel did not like Nate Davis in Tennessee.
Yeah.
He did not. And so I kind of, and Vrabel has a reputation kind of like as like a modern day, and I mean this in a complimentary way, like Lovie Smith when he was with the Bears. He's a guy who usually does not have the most talented roster in the world. He's a maximizer. He gets a lot out of his guys. So for Mike Vrabel to give up on you should have probably been more of a red flag than it was. And we mean to call us out, we even said, well, Mike Vrabel's kind of a red ass sometimes, isn't he? But no, his ass was appropriately covered or colored when it came to Nate Davis. It was probably wasn't even red. It was just, you know, he was just there with a nice, like, pale ass saying, you know what, I don't like this Nate Davis guy. He really grinds my gears.
Yeah.
So it's not looking good there.
Yeah, apologies to Mike Vrabel for the shit we talked when we signed Nate Davis. You were 100% right, and we should have listened to you. Fuck that guy. Okay, should we talk about Caleb? Wait, we got to talk about Caleb now, right?
We do. We don't got to talk. We get the honor and the damn privilege to talk about Caleb Williams. The skies parted. He came down from the heavens.
Yeah.
Lined up behind center for the Chicago Bears, and he put on a pretty good show, didn't he?
He really did. The best part about it was when we were watching the game, I was sending you messages like, oh, there were a couple plays in there I'm iffy on. Everything else was fantastic. Like, can't wait for the All-22. I hope it, you know, looks just as good. I hope it wasn't too bad on those couple plays. And then we both watched the All-22, and it was like, not only were the good plays better than I thought, the two plays I thought were iffy were not bad plays. They were good plays.
Watching it live on the broadcast, the first drop back that he had when he drew the holding penalty. Well, he didn't draw the holding penalty, but a holding penalty occurred. I think we both were like, you probably could have gotten rid of that sooner.
Yes.
But when I
was a little, I was doom and gloom. I sent out the first doom and gloom message where I was like, look, he held on to the ball too long.
When you watched the All-22, I didn't see.
No.
Anybody that was open, the Bills played it perfectly. I thought Caleb was just trying to escape the pocket and got a hold. So no, I wasn't upset about that at all. That one immediately went. I wasn't like, it didn't go from a negative to a positive, but it was certainly not a negative for me. And then the other play I was a little concerned on was, you know, he threw late to Odunze on the sideline. And they got a penalty at the time, so it wouldn't have been an interception. But it's the kind of throw that you were like, "Ooh, you make that throw too many times, one of them is going to be six the other way." So I was like, yeah, you can't be thrown late like that. But when you watch the All-22 and you see how clearly Rome was being mugged, and you can see that Caleb is seeing that, that felt more like a, I'm going to throw this just so I can get the flag that I know is coming kind of throw.
Yeah.
It did not strike me as a kid that was not seeing what he was seeing throwing late. And plus, like you said, reading out the coverage, the throw to Odunze was the right read, but Odunze, the timing was entirely off because Rome was getting mugged the whole time. So he just threw it over there knowing hopefully he'd get the flag for it. Those are the only two negatives that I had. I guess I had one more. The crosser, the over route that DJ dropped. I thought watching it broadcast, I thought at first there was a first window where he could have hit DJ, and he waited to throw it in the second window, which is not the end of the world, but I still thought that maybe contributed to the ball coming out a little late, contributed to the drop. But when I watched the All-22, you can tell there's a linebacker sinking on it or dropping back on it in that first window that wasn't initially there on the broadcast view. So from Caleb's point of view, no, the first window wasn't open. He waited properly. The second window was open. It was a perfect ball. DJ just dropped it, which I don't think, I'm not too worried about DJ Moore having a drop problem. So these things happen. I think the play that impressed us both the most was the first third down conversion throw to DJ Moore. It just read it out perfectly, stayed patient, trusted his protection, was very quick, got the ball out in a very tight window to DJ to convert for the first down. That was
the really kind of play, the kind of play that only sticks out to you because you've watched Justin Fields for the last 3 years. Right. Everybody else is probably talking about the Cole Kmet sideline throw. And we're like, look at the anticipation. Look at the timing. Look at how quickly he got the ball to the right guy.
I'll say this about Caleb. And I'll also say this about all the other rookie quarterbacks this weekend, because we're going to talk about all them, too, after we finish talking about Caleb.
Yeah.
For me, you know how when people say, like, it's not a playoff series until the home team loses about the playoff series? For me, it's not a rookie. Like, I'm not revising my take on a rookie quarterback until I see something I didn't already know for sure that they could do. Because, well, spoiler alert, right now a lot of people are talking about Bo Nix and how crisply he executed a bunch of short passes. Well, I know that Bo Nix can crisply execute short passes. That's everything else that I've got questions about in his game. I didn't see anything to change my mind. I know this about J.J. McCarthy, blah, blah, blah. I know this about... I didn't see... So for Caleb, like, the Kmet throw was awesome.
Yeah.
I was happy, and I've watched it a million times, but like, I know Caleb Williams has that back. I know that that's going to translate seamlessly to the NFL. We watched that translates. I mean, it was a better throw than Justin, I think, even who was good throwing on the run. That was a better throw. That was not a throw Justin could make, because Caleb has that quick release and was able to do that, with no platform at all. But still, like, we've seen that kind of stuff is easier to translate than... Can he hang in the pocket on third down, get through his reads quickly, deliver the ball with timing and anticipation in a tight window? That's the part that I think I'm obviously hoping is going to translate for Caleb, but that is the part that we're both a little concerned about. If he's going to fail, it's because he doesn't do that. So to see that right away was on his first third down was extremely encouraging.
I mean, you raise a good point. Our most popular episode by far is the Caleb Williams breakdown, right? Where we went through all of our opinions on Caleb Williams. You did a ton of research on it. One of the things that we go through in that episode that kind of stuck out is this thing that Caleb Williams can do. Part of the reason we think the time to throw isn't that big of a deal is because he really likes to roll out of the pocket slowly as he can, float towards the sideline, give the play as much time as possible for somebody to open up, and then rip the ball. And we saw that twice here. Once where we got the holding penalty on Darnell, but nobody ever came open. And then he just threw the ball away, didn't get hurt. And then we saw it again on the Cole Kmet play, right? He's floating slowly towards the sideline, sees Kmet, and just rips it to him, you know? And he takes the part I liked most about that play, because like you said, I knew he could do that. I knew he had the Josh Allen, the Pat Mahomes throw in him, because I've seen him do it in college. The part I like the most is he had a chance to rip that ball earlier in the play by about a second. Komet was open like kind of right from the jump. So he could have thrown it right as he went into his break, but there is a linebacker floating into the way. And all I could think when I watched it is Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields throw the ball right now. They see Cole Komet is open and they rip it and they miss that linebacker. Caleb pumps, throws off the guy in his face, throws off that linebacker. Cole is wide open. There's a perfect lane. Yeah, that's when he whips it into
The ball handling and the pump fake and just those little, you know, Dan Reeder a couple weeks ago said, he's like, those QB feel moments are just there. The one other play that really impressed me from Caleb was the scramble for the first down. And I wanted he broke it down himself. And I was really, really happy to see him explain this scramble. Because he talks all the way through it, and he was like, at first, it looked like I was going to get a single high safety look. And if you watch the film, the safety's creeping up, and he's like, so I immediately, I was going to look for Rome. Rome was running a vertical route. Would have been a good matchup right there. Rome one-on-one, sideline ball. You know, we went over the numbers for Rome Odunze and contested catches. Like, that's, you get Rome singled up on the sideline, you're going to want to take that shot. He's like, but right before a snap, the safety cycled back. It was acting. He's like, I realized very quickly that it was two man. And he said, so then I instantly looked at my back, because in two man, pretty much anything vertical's going to be double covered. He's like, I instantly looked at my back, saw that the back was covered. There was a guy running with the back in the flat. And then he just immediately, it's like the C's parted and I took off. And that's exactly what you do against two man. It's why it's a very good coverage on like third and long against immobile quarterbacks, and why it has some weaknesses against guys who can tuck it and run. And so to hear him say, like, I read this. I immediately looked for my back because that's the throw to make there. If it's open, it wasn't open. And then I took off. Just to have him walk through that scramble, how quickly he was thinking through it and how he made his decision to scramble based not on the fact that he saw open grass or that he saw a hole, as the last guy often did, but that it was the right call based on the coverage. It means he was keeping his eyes downfield, not at the open grass. The coverage dictated the run. So that was why it was really encouraging. He has that club in his bag, but he's going to get to it only when he believes it's called for based on the coverage, because he's going to try to make the throw if the throw is there. Against that specific coverage, he knew very quickly the throw is not there. The throw is not going to be there. Now is the time to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said that perfectly. It's just it's the Lincoln Riley coaching right there. It's, you get a quarterback who knows what he's talking about, not just a quarterback who knows what he's doing, right? He understands defense. He understands the offense. He wants to understand everything going on the field. I knew he said that in the conference, so I kind of knew what I was looking for when I went into the all 22 on that one. But it's really amazing how quickly you can see, like, yep, the other safety dropped back. I recognize this as cover two man just from video games. So I'm like, yeah, that's what that is. And then the thing that I always look at if I'm playing Madden is like, okay, is the linebacker spying me or is the linebacker spying the running back? Is he going to cover the running back? If he goes with the running back, you just hit the sprint button and go straight up the middle, right? And I was like, oh, look, it works in real life. And Caleb was just like, yeah, I mean, whatever. Like, I'm going to get these easy 10 yards. I'm going to do the slip and slide, and there it is. Every play had a little something different, didn't it? Like, every play showed a little something else that was in Caleb's bag. He was so calm. The thing that everybody remarked on was, like, he is too calm for a rookie quarterback. He looks too in control of what's going on. He is so smooth out there. And he gives off Aaron Rodgers vibes. I saw Aaron Rodgers in him out there because it felt like, when we're playing Aaron Rodgers and he was the Packers quarterback, it always felt like no matter what we did, we were going to be fucked. He was going to recover and he was going to somehow complete a 15-yard pass. It didn't really matter what we did. And it just felt like every time Caleb dropped back, it was like, he just looks like he's so in control of the field right now that nothing could go wrong. We've said it a million times. We obviously were going to praise him because it was fun. It was a blast. I had a great time with it. that you can't say a guy is going to have an incredible season based on preseason, but you can absolutely identify the flaws. And the thing is, Caleb displayed no flaws in this game.
Yeah, there was nothing that I came away with concerned about. Now, actually, one more thing to talk about. What he's been struggling with at camp, Eberflus throwing him a lot of blitz looks, a lot of different pressure packages. The screenplay to Swift, that was not just a called screen. If you watch, Caleb recognizes the blitz and checks to the screen, sends Odunze in motion on a little drag route that takes the defense with Odunze to the right side of the field, which opens the lane up for Swift to run 40 yards, which was a very great screen design by Shane Waldron to have that in the first place. But again, encouraging that Caleb, because it's preseason, yes, you usually see a lot of vanilla coverage stuff, but it was nice to see that the Bills threw a couple pressure looks at him. He recognized the blitz there. He motioned or he audibled to, he checked to the screenplay, which was absolutely the right call there. Obviously, Swift got 40 plus yards out of it. And then, of course, the nice sidearm toss to get the ball to Swift. That's the little Caleb spice that he adds to that. But the bigger than just the neat throw was the decision making and the recognition to get to that. So, yeah, like you can't take a whole lot positive away, or at least positive predictive away from a preseason game. But, you know, the main thing you want to walk away with is nothing that you're concerned about. There's nothing from there. I was like, that might be an issue later. Yeah. I didn't really walk away with any of that with Caleb.
He made the right call on what he needed to do on every play. He made the right read, even on the plays where he had incompletions. He had two drops, which just don't
matter. Yeah, I mean, he was...
And then the throw to Rome was absolutely, given the defense, he was the only one who was open. And it's really not his fault that Rome was first illegally contacted at 6 yards and then held thereafter. And then after the ball was thrown, there was pass interference. Like, there's nothing you could do about that. But it was just... It was correct. Everything he did was correct. Just a fantastic game. Obviously, everybody in Chicago is extremely hyped, and we are extremely hyped here, too. I mean, you mentioned Shane Waldron's play design. The least remarkable pass that Caleb completed, the little short drop to DJ Moore, who was rolling to the right side. Interesting play design. Had Carlson coming out behind him. The second Moore touched the ball, he turns around and blocks, set up for a very nice, like 12-yard game. Nice first down play.
Yeah, and we talked about this through two games. I mean, he's not obviously pulling out every trick in the bag right now, but like from what we have seen, there's a lot to like about Waldron's offense. And again, the way the PA, the run looks and the way the PA builds off the run looks is very, there's a lot of harmony there, which is something that we have been begging for through the Getsy regime and the Nagy administration. Just please God, give me someone who understands how the run and play action are supposed to work together and look similar. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah. There was one thing that went a tiny little bit wrong on the throwaway out the back of the end zone. I think Caleb thought Rome was going to break towards the back corner because as we've seen in camp, that's the place Caleb wants to connect with Rome. It seems like he loves that throw. Rome actually opened himself up for a half second. He ran forward, came back to the ball. Caleb then threw it towards the back corner of the end zone. Not a demerit against either of them, but something to kind of get excited for when those two get on the same page on those, like we're late in the snap count. It's time to break off your route and pick a place to go and try to get open plays. I think later on that is going to turn into like Rome's just going to head to that back quarter of the end zone. He's going to jump as high as he can and Caleb's going to try to put it on him. So I'm looking forward to that here as the season comes on. I'm hyper focused on that back corner of the end zone because I think Caleb and Rome are both like, that's our spot. We're going to score.
Yeah. I was talking with Robert Schmitz from, worked with Windy City Gridiron, currently the editor of DeBear's blog and stuff. And he was like, that feels like a play that is going to be a touchdown between those two eventually. They still got to work on it a little bit. But he was like, it was that close. And he's like, and man, if he'd hit that, that would have been the SportsCenter top play for a long while. He's like, that feels like one that's coming. So
we will see it. I guarantee you it is coming down the pipe. All right. So let's leave the Bears. Let's talk about other rookie quarterbacks. We love talking about rookie quarterbacks.
We'll just go in draft order. Okay. You know, somehow next up after Caleb Williams was Jaden Daniels. So really funny. I've had a few people tweet at me about how awesome it sounds like Jaden Daniels has been at Commanders camp, to which I say, I don't trust anything that Washington media is putting. The Jaden Daniels hype campaign since January has been like it was orchestrated by Pravda in Washington. Yeah. Like, they are controlling the narrative hardcore. So I don't trust that anyways. But also, he hasn't even fully locked down the starting job, according to Dan Quinn. He's still alternating with Marcus Mariota. So this is a guy who at least half of the time is going against the twos for the Washington Commanders, a defense that was 31st overall in DVOA last year and was one of the worst pass defenses of all time. Emmanuel Forbes was their first round corner last year and is already like a third stringer and being laughed out of the league. Did you see the video clip of the Commanders Jets joint practices?
I did not. No.
Okay. Garrett Wilson is lined up against Emmanuel Forbes before the snap, and you just hear this kid yell out, "Garrett's gonna cook Forbes!" Like, before the ball's in, and immediately, absolutely, he just instantly torches Emmanuel Forbes. Like, hilarious. But yeah, no. So yeah, he's looking good against. He's 25 years old with 1,700,000 college football reps, and we'll talk about this when we get to Bo Nix too. Like, these guys should look pretty good in practice against a not good defense. They should know how to find their check down. They should know how to take care of the football. What happened? You just got muted?
No, I muted myself. I was to subject you to my mechanical keyboard. I was looking it up because I was like, was Marcus Mariota in college at the same time Jaden Daniels was somehow? But no, not quite.
No.
Not almost.
Yeah, there's about four. Mariota was drafted in 2015. Jaden was a freshman at ASU in 2019.
That's right. I was like, it could be. It could be, but no, not quite.
And then I thought it was notable that when one reason I don't trust what Commanders people are saying about Jaden Daniels at Commanders camp is when the Commanders and Jets had joint practices, the Jets media was all tweeting about how hapless Jaden Daniels looked against their defense. At one point, I think someone tweeted the stats that he was like 7 of 11 for 15 yards with a couple of sacks against the Jets defense at 11 on 11s. But none of the Washington people tweeted that at all.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't trust that Jaden's cooking. But anyways, Jaden got one series against the Jets backups, and he completed a nice go ball. He also airmailed his other two throws, but he completed a nice go ball. And again, just like I was saying earlier, where nothing's going to change my opinion of a rookie quarterback until he does something I know I didn't think he could do. I know Jaden Daniels can throw a nice go ball, guys. He really can. Justin Fields throws a pretty go ball. Kenny Pickett throws a pretty go ball. Mac Jones throws a pretty go ball. We talked about this where if the one kind of deep ball that you can... Nick Foles throws one of the prettiest nine balls I've ever seen. If the one kind of deep pass you can make is the take a couple step drops in a clean pocket and then just, you know, put it up there against a guy who's got a step on the outside, you get, what, one, maybe two of those opportunities per game in the regular season? I mean, how many deep balls, like, how many times did we really see Justin Fields get a chance to uncork one downfield, down the side? Especially in today's NFL, where most defenses are too high. Washington fans, you're excited for your guy. He hit a 45-yard pass or whatever, and then he had a nice little rushing touchdown. I get it. But nothing I've heard coming out of Commanders camp or out of that preseason otherwise is going to change my opinion on Jaden Daniels.
I think it's telling that they had one positive drive and they got him the hell out of there. They were like, ooh, we're going to ride that for the next week, guys. We are not putting him back out. First pass by he had so few I could go through them all. First pass, he overthrew his running back, who was 2 yards ahead of him by a whole fucking human being. Just a ridiculous overthrow. Well,
he was on the move a little bit on that one, right? Like,
yeah,
that was,
yeah, and he can't throw when he's on the move.
Right. That's people have this impression that Jaden Daniels, like I said, the impression is that Jaden Daniels creates, and it's because people are just looking at how fast he is and they are projecting a whole other quarterback onto him. But like, this is a guy who only made 15 passes all year long last year when moved off his spot or when he was on the run. He's nearly not much of a thrower on the run for the most part. So, you know, when he is moving his feet a little bit, sometimes you'll see stuff like him airmailing that running back on the screen when he's rolling out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and the other pass he had was the deep one, and yes, it got completed. Apparently he audibled off of something else because he pointed to the sidelines and smiled at his coaches and like did a little gesture. Here's the deal, Jaden. You underthrew that deep pass by just a little bit. And if that corner were Sauce Gardner, that was an easy interception. It just happened to be that this dude could not quite reel that one in. I don't want to take too much away from the guy because it was two passes, it was three passes, and it was a run in for a touchdown. And I do want Washington fans to be excited because they really have not had much to be excited about for a long time here. But this was not the thing to get hyped about. Like, of all the quarterbacks, I think, who went off this weekend, I would probably say Jaden went last because of that horribly disturbing short throw that he made. And then deciding that he could audible as a fucking rookie in preseason game 2 off of a short screen pass into a deep throw down the sideline, that is the most terrifying thing I have ever heard for that coaching staff, is that Jaden's just like, you know what? I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, buddy. Jaden throws it deep. Jaden don't throw no screens. Jaden throws it long, man. So a little concerning there from Jaden. The one thing he didn't get to do, though, which is good for him, is run full speed headlong into a linebacker, which is what I noticed the most on his college tape. So we've gone one game, and he hasn't run into a brick wall. So good on you, Jaden. I'm being pretty negative. I'm being more negative than you are.
You are. That's it's impressive. But, you know.
But yeah, I just... I can't wait to see what he does in the next game.
Yeah, and like, to his credit, the audible was correct. He got a one-on-one matchup.
But
I, again, nothing that I saw that would change my opinion of him. Like, I know the kid throws a nice go ball. Now, if he had been flushed out of the pocket and rolling to his right, and he had uncorked it 50 yards off plat, I mean, if Jaden Daniels had made the Komet throw...
Yeah.
That would have been notable to me. I'd have been like, oh shit, maybe I'm wrong about the guy.
Yeah, if he makes that throw, I'm going to be like, uh-oh, now I'm going to look like an idiot.
Yeah, but like, you know, from a clean pocket, the bup, launch it up. I know he can do that. But those opportunities are few and far between. You can't build an NFL offense around that throw.
Well, and the thing is, I think people correlate that shit to a strong arm. And Jaden Daniels has a hell of an arm, right? He can throw it really far. Yeah. But you just look at the Vikings game. We're not going to get to him quite yet. JJ threw two very nice, much better, perfectly catchable go balls. Yeah. And it's not like his strength is his arm power. You know?
Really conflate distance of throw with arm strength. And that in the NFL, that's not it. If you make it to the NFL... you are perfectly capable, when you have both feet underneath you, of lobbing it at least 50, 60 yards. All of these guys can do that. Even Tyson Bagent, if he's just lobbing it up with both feet under him, can probably do 50 yards.
That's right.
Arm strength in the NFL is about being able to make the kind of throws that Caleb made to Komet, where you don't have a platform at all, you're running full sprint, and you're able to whip it on a line 30, 40 yards. So, yeah, no, I know he can throw deep from a clean pocket. I know that. Most guys can. So anyway, number 3, Drake May, we barely knew
It was a monsoon. He came out, he handed it off twice. He threw a nice pass, and it was dropped, and that was the end of his night. So
yeah, so I think we'll tune in next week to see if we get more Drake at some point. And likewise, I'm not overreacting to reports of Drake May struggling in Patriots camp. Because one, the Boston media is actually brutal Two, I think the Patriots, they're all clearly Belichick disciples, and they are clearly taking a tough love approach with Drake May. They are not taking the Nick Saban approach there. And yeah, that's a Patriots defense that was top 10 in DVOA last year. So you got to bear in mind who these guys are going up against in practice. When people are telling me that Bo Nix is cooking in practice, Jaden Daniels is cooking in practice, Caleb Williams having an up and down day in practice, Drake May struggling in practice again. Well, Drake May and Caleb Williams are the two guys going against top 15 defenses.
Yep.
And the other two are going against the Broncos and the Browns. The Broncos had a game where they gave up 70 points last year, guys. So yeah, it's going to look a little different.
Yeah. So next, we could talk about JJ. You want to talk about an up and down day, down and up day.
JJ wasn't the third quarterback off the board. I said we're going in order.
Drake was the third.
Drake was the
fourth,
third.
Fourth is JJ, right?
No, fourth was Michael Penix.
Oh, God, Michael Penix. I ignore him because he's not going to play this year.
Did you watch him?
Yeah.
Did you watch him?
Yes, I watched the Falcons. He did exactly what we thought, right?
The theme of all of these quarterbacks is that to quote our the late, great Denny Green, they are who we thought they were, every single one of these guys. I thought Michael Penix looked very good whipping it outside the numbers.
Yeah.
And I thought anytime he had to move his feet even a little bit, it was a wounded duck. That was about all there is to say there.
He ripped it right over the middle. It was like his second pass. Great completion. And I was like, holy shit, Michael. Like, I can't believe it. And then he ignored the middle of the field the rest of the game. Yeah. He was like, baby, we're going sidelines. Yeah. Anytime he had to shuffle, just a horror show, he looked like Michael Penix. So, yeah. All
right. Now time for QB5, J.J. McCarthy. Okay. Who apparently has a sore knee. So
that's right. So JJ started out his day. Could I have called it any more perfectly, Kyle? Could it have gone any more like I said it would? JJ immediately goes out there. As he's moving his feet, he overthrows his running back by half a human. Not a full human like Jaden. Half a human. That one goes out of bounds. And then here he goes. He's throwing an out route to the sideline. And just like I said, he doesn't have that throw in his repertoire at an NFL level. It comes out way too slow, and it goes straight to the Raiders. So that was unfortunate. Now the rest of the game, he came back out there. Well, I shouldn't say that. The next drive, he also looked kind of miserable.
Yeah.
What we've learned is that anytime JJ is moving his feet, he's going to have a hard time throwing the ball.
Right.
He needs to get set.
It is exactly what we said about JJ too. Like when the plays where he was in the, and he was calm in the pocket too. The first big completion he had where he stepped up right up the middle, threw it over the middle. That was a very good play, very calm in the pocket. When he was ripping, I mean, he ripped a deep out to the right off of play action. That was fantastic. Just had a couple of really nice throws off play action. His second touchdown pass was a coverage bust, but a nice
real
ball.
Gimme.
The first touchdown pass though was a nice ball,
pretty
and deep to the left, which we did note was the area he struggled. Although this, I hate when people do this. Lewis Riddick, who is just always offended, perpetually offended, tweeted, "I thought he couldn't throw deep left," with a clip of that play, and I was like, okay. The tone that you're using there drives me nuts because, one, it implies that people saying JJ struggled deep left in college were just lying or making it up. You can look at the fucking numbers yourself, man. You can look at the tape. Two, nobody was saying this about JJ McCarthy to be a dick. I had no feelings on JJ McCarthy before breaking him down or before looking at the numbers. It was an observation. I was just like, wow, the numbers throwing outside and to the left are pretty bad. And again, if you're only scouting a guy on the NFL is, why are they called reps, guys? They're called reps because it's about repetitions. It's about how often you can do it. It's not about whether you can do it once. If I made you a supercut of all four touchdown passes of Ryan Leaf's career or whatever, I'm sure they're nice throws. And I could put it on Twitter and be like, well, you all told me Ryan Leaf don't throw no touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's not about that he can he do it once. It's about the repetitions. His mechanics get.
Yeah.
And again, notably, as it was a nice ball, but it was also a nice ball from a clean pocket where he was able to set his feet. it's more we're worried about JJ when he's forced to when he's flushed left a little bit when his feet aren't set. Can he throw the ball left? It tends to die on him a little bit outside. Yeah. So
he does not have it when he's on the move. He's a lot like Bryce Young. He is a lot like Bryce Young in that he can get set. He can get outside the pocket, and if he has time to get set, sure, the throw is going to be okay. But in the NFL, are you going to have that much time? And when you don't, it just looks horrible. You know, it comes off wrong. It's probably going to get intercepted, or it's some other disastrous thing is going to happen. So, you know, Bryce Young was the number one pick in a draft. Like, there's a lot to like about J.J. McCarthy, but he does need a specific set of circumstances.
To use a guy more of a more recent vintage, he's a lot like Kirk Cousins. You know, Cousins was never one to – he was never at his best ripping the ball outside the numbers. Kirk, like, under center play action, and he liked to throw it over the middle of the field, and he liked those out routes to the arm side. I mean, that's – you can tell – when the whole logic behind Minnesota taking J.J. McCarthy is they were like, we think we can, you know, a little bit of money ball. Like, we can't replace Kirk Cousins, but we can recreate him in the aggregate for $40 million less a year for a couple of years. That's obviously what they're hoping J.J. can be. And again, that was what I said was the upside best case scenario for him in the draft. And I still, like, again, I didn't see anything to change my mind one way or the other on J.J. I saw the flaws when he's moving, when he's throwing outside the numbers. And I saw the strengths when he's in a clean pocket, when he's navigating even a messy pocket. He does have good pocket presence. He had a nice scramble, too, where, you know, things broke down around him. He went, stepped up, stepped through, got a nice scramble, not a nice first down. And then again, when he, especially to the right-hand side, when he has like a deep drop play action and he's got a deep out or something, like, he can really fire that thing in there. So,
yeah. Yes, so finally we get to...
He might be hurt, so who knows? Maybe...
Yeah, well, he's not... Again, that's a guy who does not need to play this year. I don't think he's going to play this year. So, sit out a week, buddy. Like, it doesn't matter. You got a whole season to get under your belt. Don't worry about it too much. Him and Penix, like, again, a lot of leeway there. We know these guys are getting, you know, at least a full season to sit behind vets. One guy who probably won't, Bo Nix sure played football. Oh my God. The amount of people I have seen talking about like he had a good game or some shit. You tell me, Kyle, what was the difference between him and Rippon's performance in the Hall of Fame game against the same fucking level of guys?
Nobody learned a damn thing from either Kenny Pickett preseason, man.
Nobody learned a
damn thing. All they're like is like, what I see is a 70% completion rate and no touchdowns and four scoring drives, and that's winning football, by God.
Yep.
Guys, it was 8.3 yards per completion. It was 5.9 yards per attempt. What I saw was a lot of quick throws outside the numbers, short of the sticks. He had one sort of nice-ish deep ball into the end zone that I thought the receiver maybe had a play on it. I wouldn't say it was a perfectly thrown ball, but you know, some wide receivers would have come down with it. There's been a little hyperbole on Twitter about that. Do you get Broncos fans like he threw a perfect dot that their wide receiver dropped? And I was like, eh. It hit his fingertips. Like, let's not be crazy.
Yes.
I thought he had one nice little throw when he was scrambling to the left. The first third down that he converted, I think it was. It was like a 22-yard completion right along the sidelines. That was nice.
That was a good pass.
I also thought, though, like, I thought his footwork was really frantic. It looked a lot like Auburn Bo Nix to me. There were a couple plays that he made. There was one throw over the middle that he dirted. That would have, if he just stayed in the pocket and ripped it with both feet under him, I think it was a 15-yard completion. But he hesitates for a second, and then he takes two unnecessary steps, like, forward for no reason at all, really. And then he kind of dirts it because he rushes it. And he had happy feet pretty badly. Like,
do you remember what I used to call Alex Smith, young Alex Smith?
No, we're old.
That was Courage the Cowardly QB.
Oh, yeah.
because he would do the same thing, because it looked like he was doing the Hanna-Barbera legs, where he's just like, bubbly. That's what Bo Nix looks like he's doing out there. He's just like, and then he just throws it out there. God, every time he got his legs moving, it was the same thing as with McCarthy and Penix. he can't make that throw. That's not a Bo Nix throw. We knew that about him.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I mean, it looked to me a lot like the second game that Bryce Young had in the preseason last year, except without the pressure. It just looked like, yeah, you can make all these really, really tiny short throws, but oh my God, every time you try not to do that. The one exception was that great throw early along the left sideline. That was perfect, you know, like, but that was the one. And he threw the ball a lot, and a lot of those passes were just ugly, or they were short. They were tiny, little quick passes that got him 3 or 4 yards.
And here's what's going to happen with Bo Nix. He's going to, because he has Sean Payton as his head coach, and because he is smart about taking care of the football, and because he will spam the quick game, he's going to have the Gardner Minshew rookie year, where he's probably going to have, like, 19 touchdowns and only like 6 interceptions. He's going to complete like 66% of his passes. There's going to be a lot of short throws. Yeah. They're going to score like 14 points a game, but people will focus on the completion percentage, the passer rating. They'll be like, this kid, not bad for a rookie. And then it'll be about midway through year two, just like it was with Gardner Minshew. And everyone's going to be like, oh, that's all you can do. Okay.
Yeah.
That wasn't just like a nice rookie. See, that's just who you are. You're a game manager. But yeah, I mean, if you want to change my mind, show me something that I didn't think you could do. I didn't see Bo Nix ripping a lot of intermediate throws. I didn't see him ripping anything over the middle of the field. I didn't see him booming it downfield off platform or anything like that. I saw him take a 3-step drop and rip the ball into the flats. And I know Bo Nix can do that. Trust me, that was Oregon's entire offense. I've seen him do it.
That's right.
If you want me to compliment Bo Nix's touch on screen passes, I certainly will. He's got that down. But yeah, I didn't see anything from any of the rookie quarterbacks, Caleb included, that I was just like, I didn't know you had that in you. And that's exactly why I'm feeling exactly about them after these debuts that I felt about them at draft time. I think Caleb's going to be great. I think Drake May might be a little rough this year with the supporting cast, but Drake May is going to be fine. I think Michael Penix is slow. I think Jaden Daniels, you know, sure, he's going to have a couple highlight reel plays every now and then, mostly with his legs and the occasional go ball, and then there's going to be a lot of sacks in between. J.J. McCarthy.
If he somehow survives, that dude's getting injured, man.
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy is going to look pretty good in that system, I think. I don't, you know.
The thing we didn't cover is that whether or not J.J. plays, that Minnesota offense looks good.
Oh, yeah.
Those plays look really nice, and I don't like that.
Kevin O'Connell's very good at his job. They've got a lot of talent. We were dead-ass wrong on Jordan Addison. He's very good. T.J. Hockenson's good. Justin Jefferson's the best wide receiver in football. I think Sam Darnold is going to look more than functional in that offense. They got like 8 yards per attempt out of Nick Mullen last year. He was throwing a lot of interceptions, but he was moving the ball just fine. So, yeah, I mean, pretty much anyone's going to thrive in that Viking system. I think J.J. McCarthy's going to do pretty good there, too. Now, granted, with J.J. McCarthy, the question really more is going to be 3-4 years down the road when it's time to pay him, when it's time to pay guys around him. Can he switch from being the guy carried by the talent around him and the scheme to being the guy who carries the scheme and the talent? That's going to be the key. But, you know, for a couple of years, Minnesota is not really worried about that. They're going to try to do what they can in this window while he's cheap. Just like the 49ers are trying to do it right now in this window while Brock Purdy is still cheap before they got to pay him.
Right.
That's a discussion to be had at some point because, like, at 49ers, I know you think you got to pay him, but, like, what if you didn't? What if he didn't
pay him? Oh, man, I can't wait for those discussions because you're right. Yeah. What if you just don't?
Yeah, that's going to be an off-season discussion for sure. So that's the rookie quarterbacks. We've got a little bit of time. We're a little bit over, but whatever. Do we want to talk about Hassan Reddick?
I want to talk about Hassan Reddick.
You have the floor. You lead off with Hassan Reddick.
You know that I like Hassan Reddick just overall, right? But I can't believe it's gotten to this point. We've been harping on this since they got him. Like, wow, it started out. It's really strange that they traded for him but didn't give him a contract because that doesn't make any sense. Because there's no way you get a defensive end of that caliber for the cheap ass price they did, a single third round pick, which could maybe be a second, depending on what he does. Like, there's no way, unless he was holding out from the Eagles because he wanted a contract right now, right? And then we just kept saying that. And then suddenly he's holding out, and the Jets are out here all over the media, like, oh, he said he would be here. And like, the least believable shit I have ever heard in my fucking life. No, he didn't say he would be there. He said, I will come as long as we are making a contract. Right. As long as talks are ongoing, as long as we have the framework hammered out, sure, I'll show up. Right? Maybe he said something like that. Here's what I understand the Jets did. The Jets said, here, we have a contract offer for you. And the offer was to turn the last year of his contract from non-guaranteed money to guaranteed money. Here's a fucking newsflash, New York. You traded to get the guy, potentially a second round pick. His money is basically guaranteed already. That's not an offer. He's looking for a long-term deal. That's not a good faith offer from New York. They knew he wasn't going to say yes to that. Now they're in the media and they're like, well, we'll talk about it after the season. He's in the last year of his deal. That's why he fucking asked for a trade, because he wants a long-term deal. You assholes, you unbelievable shitheads. Yeah. Like, of course he's asking for a trade again. You are not negotiating in good faith.
So transparently, they thought they could trick this guy into playing as a rental with a bad faith promise. Like, oh, yeah, we'll talk about the contract. And he figured it out that they're not serious about it, and he's not playing without a new contract. He probably told him he'd report to camp while negotiations were ongoing, but negotiations aren't ongoing. It's underhanded. And also, there's a guy, Connor Hughes. He's a Jets beat writer, and he is just a pathetic fucking shill for the New York Jets. Always just, you can tell, always just a mouthpiece for whatever the Jets want him to say. And he read out the Jets' excoriating statement about where they were like, it wouldn't be right for the Jets will commit to him once he commits to us.
Oh, that horse shit.
The Jets won't cater to a player who's never even played a down for them, which is news to me, because how the fuck did Nathaniel Hackett and Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard end up with the New York fucking Jets then, if you don't cater to guys who've never played a down for you?
Yeah.
Before? That is such transparent horseshit. And I told him this on Twitter, but like, I told that Connor Hughes guy, like, you should be ashamed of yourself for carrying water this hard for the Jets. Like, have some damn shame.
But I just absolutely disgusting by that organization. And the thing is, Jets fans aren't going to fall for that shit. Jets fans hate their organization more than any other group of fans in the NFL. Well, they're going to be like, you assholes wasted a second round pick on this.
More than anything else, Jets fans hate being fucking laughed at, and everyone in the world laughing at the Jets right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is insane. Now, on the other hand, New York, Chicago here.
Yeah,
we'll help you recoup that pick. Yeah, we'll give you a third. And we got money to pay the guy. So,
yeah, that would be interesting to me, depending on the price point. I'm still intrigued by probably a lesser deal for Matthew Judon. Still
sure,
but would both of them be content to back up Austin Booker? Is the question. So, anyways, I think for tonight, folks, thank you for tuning in. I think it's a perfect place to end. Austin Booker, the sack king of Chicago.
I want to, I'll end it on some praise for Ryan Poles. The one thing we talked about, if he's going to keep all this extra cap room, the Ryan Poles deal. We've seen it every trade deadline, right? Well, guess what? We've got disgruntled defensive ends lining up. We got Micah fucking Parsons out there. We've got Hassan Reddick, who may not even play up until then.
Yeah,
right?
Ryan Poles is figuring out that the new market inefficiency is trading mid-round picks for disgruntled established stars.
Damn right. You know what? One out of two ain't bad so far. So, all right. That's all I've got. That it for you?
Yep. So Hard Knocks tomorrow night, and then the Bears play. The Bears will have joint practices with the Bengals this week, which I'm guessing will be the real game. I'm wondering if any of the starters will even play this next weekend, because it sounds like it's going to be pretty rainy in Chicago, so maybe not. But yeah, we'll be back next week to talk about Hard Knocks episode 2 and preseason game number 3, joint practices with the Bengals, whether Jahmyr Gibbs is still alive or not, who knows?
Prayers for Jahmyr Gibbs, prayers for J.J. McCarthy, right? Prayers for J.J. McCarthy. All right, see you. see you next week. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.